Welcome. Hi, I'm Dan Schmidt. This is the Deer in Deer Hunting Deer Talk Now podcast. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening to this wherever you have downloaded this podcast. And thanks for watching. If you're watching this on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, yada, 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 we absolutely appreciate you and we love you from the bottom of my heart for making this program highly successful. We really cannot thank you enough. All we ask you to do, we're providing these for free. Like and subscribe and comment, please. Ask questions. And that is where today's podcast comes from. Ian Sanchez, my crack producer slash videographer slash editor, he had the idea for today's podcast. And Ian, I'm going to let you introduce it.
Okay. Well, yeah. So essentially,
it came from a listener, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We had a comment on a YouTube short recently, and someone had asked, you know, about like, you know, well, they said, this doesn't apply to me. It was a food plot video. I'm 15 years old. This doesn't really make sense to me. And it kind of struck me that for a lot of our younger viewers and anyone out there who is, you know, under the age of 18 or even 20 and in their early 20s, they might have a lot of questions for what opportunities might be out there in terms of getting experience as a young hunter. And I, for one, I have a lot of questions. Like, I don't even know, you know, how young could I be to go out there and, you know, hunt on my own. Like how much you know, what limits are there, I guess, is where I want to go with that.
You know, it's a great question, Ian, and the listener slash viewer who submitted that, I think he even also said, like, hey, this is great information, but it doesn't really apply to me. And, you know, we and I use that term collectively in the hunting industry. Again, I hate the term, but it's what we do. It's we work in this community. It is an industry. Okay, I'll shut up on that. But we kind of gloss over that, right? You know, we talk about, like, today we talk about, oh, you're hunting public land, or I'm sorry, private land, and you're planting food plots, and you're managing your deer, you know, and there's all this stuff, and there's so much emphasis puking, you know, about this that we do gloss over, some of the younger demographic listeners and viewers, and also hunting levels. And I'm glad you guys brought it up, because I wrote about this in this. I'm going to pull my Dr. Phil. It's in the book. It's in the book. You can't get my book anymore. It was Whitetail Wisdom. I wrote it over 15 years ago. But that's how I started, Ian. I started when I started hunting. We didn't own land, never did own land in my family. We hunted public land. We went in northern Wisconsin and hunted state land, national forest land, some of the hardest to hunt public land in the world, probably next to, I guess, Pennsylvania, you know, or, you know, maybe Georgia, or a place like that with a lot of hunters, you know, in public land. And what we did is you had to learn it. And this was before the internet. This was before all those things. So to answer your question to start, could a 16-year-old who's got a driver's license and a beat-up Chevy S10 like I had go out there today and not only hunt public land? The answer there is yes. And be successful? The answer is a resounding yes, and especially with the tools you have at your disposal. So, you know, I guess I'm gonna ask your next question and chime in here when
that's a good answer. Mine was a Chevy Blazer, but
a Chevy. Well, that's okay. Actually, my buddy Joe had a Blazer, and we called that the meat wagon.
It was like the dad version of the S10.
It was, yeah. And he actually we threw many a bloody carcasses from public land deer hunts in that thing. Now this is going back to way before you were born. This was back when I was in college, you know, and we were sustenance hunting. You know,
yeah.
Come back to our dorm rooms and, or not dorm rooms, our rental houses on campus. And the only reason, well, we did it because we were poor, but we also did it because your roommates didn't steal your food if you were eating deer and grouse and
squirrels
and rabbits. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. but what we did back then is we didn't have, you know, back then, this probably blows your mind, but if you had access to an aerial photo, which you had to go to the courthouse or the library to order, pay for, and then get some black and white photo, or short of that, like just a topo map.
Yeah.
And then it was just like, good Lord. I mean, you were just guessing.
We have it so easy these days.
So incredibly easy.
I can go on the app store right now, and there's like five apps that I could just download. And
awesome apps.
Yeah.
And you can not only find out where the public lands are, you can find out where the private lands are. So if I was my younger self, if I was 24 again, wish I was, maybe not, I'd have hair, but maybe that wasn't a good thing. But if I was 24 again, what I would be doing is, back then we were just looking at public land, and it's like, okay, where is the public land? Where, okay, I can hunt this. But today, we weren't even thinking back then too much of like, in what proximity is this public land to private land? Because ding, ding, ding. And you might not want to be that guy, but as a public land hunter, I was, you know, if I would have known about it. Basing your, I'm going to hunt the public, but I'm going to key it off of this private land, especially now that I can download an app and I can see where the guy has his food plots, you know. I could see how the deer are probably using that property.
Right. And then you can just base, you know, all of that information, make a, you know, good judgment, go into public land. And that is such an advantage in comparison to 2010, you know, even 10 years ago.
Even 10 years ago. But what I would do is, again, I wrote about it in the book. It's my Dr. Phil.
It's a good Dr. Phil impression.
Analyze the ecotones. No matter what you're doing, whether you are hunting public land or private land, and you are, I'm going to gear this towards that young viewer, listener, that asked the question. What is an ecotone? It's a very simple concept. Ecotones are where overlapping landscapes come into play. So back in the day when we were analyzing topographical maps, we just looked at the topo maps like, you know, you'd see the rings for the elevation, and then you would pick out, you know, some of the old school deer hunters taught us this. You would pick out what they called natural funnels, and you could see that through the topographical features on a topo map. It's like, okay, here's where two ridges come together, and, you know, you got elevation, 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 and you know, there's a nice travel corridor through there going from A to B. But the ecotones that I would suggest looking for are, yeah, you're going to look for that. But on a topo map, you're looking for where a conifer forest meets a hardwood ridge, where a swamp kind of gives way to some higher ground, to where, you know.
Kind of like where a forest meets a prairie.
Forest meets a prairie, because deer are creatures of the edge.
Right.
And what you always want to look for is edge cover. Edge cover is where you're going to find deer. And then once you have that, now if you're just hunting on some big, vast swath of public land, that's what you want to key on. Does it have to be miles and miles off the road? No, absolutely not. But you pinpoint those, you make your own maps, you print them off, or you don't have to print them off anymore. You could screenshot them on your phone. And then you start putting some boot leather to the ground. And then it's a lot of scouting. In spring, like, I know you're mushroom hunting right now, right?
Yeah, morels.
When you're out there mushroom hunting, then keep those things in mind. Drop a pin on your phone on that app.
Yep.
And say, hey, you know, this, I found a great deer trail right now in spring.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can tell when they're fresh. I mean, especially now with all the mud, it makes it a little bit easier to look at a deer sign.
And then always be thinking point A to point B. Not that you just found a trail. Where are those trails going to?
Bedding areas, food, all of that good stuff.
Water. And follow them back in there. If you're looking for mushrooms, follow them back in there and say, you know, is this a deer bedding area? How do I know? You don't know. You find out by getting back in there and, oh, this is some thick stuff back in here. And there's a lot more deer sign. And now you're finding old rubs.
Yep.
You're finding old scrapes from last year. So that's telling you something. So what I always said, and it wasn't my, I didn't coin this, but it's any public land, if I was my younger self, I'd tell you what, I'd be going down in that Mississippi corridor in Illinois, and I'd be hunting the hell out of that stuff. If I had the time, and you could be living out of your truck, because you could be killing big deer, anybody could be, with a little, I always call it the 3-year program. Like I said, I didn't coin that phrase. The 3-year program for me was, I'm hunting public land. I'm making that commitment. And then, committing 3 years to studying it, which you can really do today, like we said, with the technology that we have. And then some really quality time spent. It doesn't have to be a lot of time. It could be like you going out there looking for mushrooms in spring or shed hunting, or in fall while you're hunting a little bit, not too much. Not that you're not going to do that, but it's also after the season. And then once you get to year 3, it's kind of like that wide receiver in the NFL. Even if he's a stud as a rookie, he might get lucky. You might get lucky. I'm not saying that you're not good, but you would like maybe get lucky and kill a deer that first year. But the second year, you're starting to learn it. The third year, what I always found was, bam, that's when it really starts to click.
Yeah.
So that's some of the initial reactions I'd have to that as far as how to get started.
Yeah.
You know, or just to take that off the table that this is, I can't accomplish this.
Right. So I want to shift focus from kind of like the general, is it possible to, let's talk about shooting. Let's talk about, you know, what season should you, you know, pursue this on? And furthermore, like, you know, what kind of practice would you be looking at for this?
You know, that's a good question, Ian. Because we are all enamored with bow hunting in America. It's the sexy thing to do. Like, oh, I'm going to go. And I didn't mean it weird, but I'm just saying, like, I should do. Okay, let me use a better phrase. It's the more happening thing. I'm a bow hunter, and I'm going to go out there and shoot a deer with a bow and arrow. shooting wise, we did it with gun season. So our gun season, as you all know, is 9 days in November. Now I know other states like Illinois has a 3-day gun season. Some of the other states have other, you know, Minnesota's got, I think, a 2-week. Michigan might have a 2-week. But I would highly recommend starting that first year. And I know I'm getting ahead of what your question actually was. But as a gun hunter, starting that way, because that way it's not as difficult to experience success the first year. If you're gun hunting, you can get back in there, and people say, oh man, that, you know, that public land gets hammered, it's just hammered with hunters. I don't know exactly where you all hunt, but I can guarantee you can go somewhere in your state for gun season, and especially get past the opening weekend, and you're going to have some places all to yourself. So, your question was beyond that. It was actually earlier, you said as far as shooting.
Yeah, more geared towards like practice. What kind of practice should someone a little bit younger be looking towards? Like, I mean, they're fit, right? They, you know, if they're fit and they're young, they have nothing to worry about. They can get out there and move around and maneuver a little bit more than some older gentlemen who are trying to go out there and hunt public land, which gives them an advantage, I would say, to go to different areas, different advantage spots, ridge lines, anything, like you said, any ecotones.
Yeah, you know, especially some of the younger guys, if you're a bow hunter, I know there's some of these young bucks and buckets, does, that they can shoot the lights out with a bow or a crossbow. I mean, they could shoot, I mean, heck, back in the day, we were shooting 20, 25 yards, and we thought, man, that's it. I'm money. But I know there's some of these young kids out there. I'll call you kids because you're younger, much younger. You could be probably my kids. That they could shoot 50, 60 yards with no problem. And I know that's the fact. And then when you are hunting somewhere back, you know, into some of these areas, you can set up. You talked about an ecotone. You talk about, I know some specific instances where I hunted and I really pigeonholed myself to those short encounters, but on a, I'm talking 15, 20 yards, getting that close to a public land buck, good luck. And even if he's a yearling, I defy anyone, Now, there's a lot of talk about there about hunting public land, and it, like I said, that's the catchphrase of the day. But you get a public land yearling buck within 25 yards, that is a different creature than the 20 than the year and a half old buck that's living in, you know, our friend Lee Lakoski's place. That deer, you know, John Eberhardt always called it consequential hunting pressure. If you don't put any pressure on that deer until he's 4, 5, 6 years old, he doesn't have a nary a clue in the world as to what's going on. But you take that same deer, and he's growing up in the Manistee National Forest, the Schwamigan National Forest, or, you know, the Ozarks or someplace, that frickin' deer is going to come unglued, turned inside out, if you try to get him within 20 yards. If you have the capabilities of shooting 40, 50 yards, different story. However, I always preface that statement by, don't do that. Just because you can shoot 50 or 60 yards really, really well in the backyard, make sure you're practicing that in the hunting woods, because it's hard. You know, it's very difficult. What I would recommend is absolutely, and I know I see you guys out here shooting, just keep doing that. I mean, shoot all summer, whether you're with your bow or your gun. I know Mac is our other producer. He is he's going to be doing a series of videos on. He wants to set up a basically like a sniper rifle for deer hunting, and some of those guys will go out west with that kind of stuff. I would say absolutely do your due diligence, get proficient. But then really start studying this stuff. Start studying the landscape. Start studying deer behavior. And I think everything's going to start coming into more focus. Deer Talk Now is brought to you by Apex Outdoor Rewards. Each year, Apex Outdoor Rewards gives both whitetail and turkey hunters the chance to win big payouts on their harvests. There are only 2,500 spots left for this year's Turkey Challenge, and they're filling up fast. For more information and to register, visit apexoutdoorrewards.com. I don't know what you'd call it, but I do see a trend for some of the younger viewers and listeners, is that they think like, oh, I got to hunt out of a saddle, or, oh, you know, I got to strap a climbing tree stand to my back and go back in there, or oh, I should be really packing these quick ladders and a light hang. You don't need to do that. You really don't. I've done it back in the day. I did it I don't know how many times with nothing, basically hunting off the ground, and that's a lost skill for any type of hunting, bow hunting or gun hunting. Is the biggest thing for me is learning the land. And that the only way you're going to learn the land, you can sit there and scour those overhead views until you're blue in the face. It does not replace actually being out there and watching deer. So what I always say is let the deer show you how to hunt them. Make some educated guesses. Okay, so here are some ecotones I should hone in on. Here are some natural runways. Here are some funnels. Now get out there. Best way you can do is hunt off the ground. Sometimes I did it basically bow hunting. I snuggled myself up against some boulders, some rock outcroppings. Did I kill deer? Not too many, but I saw a lot of deer and I learned it. And then maybe later I would come in with a portable stand. I never hunted out of a saddle. I came in with lots of portable stands. I came in with lots of climbers. Now, technically here where we hunt, you're not supposed to leave a stand in the woods overnight set up. What I would always do, I always adhered to the letter of the law that way. But to be honest with you, I know Chris Behrens is like just schlecking his things in and out of there every day. I didn't do that. I would bury it in a brush pile and put a padlock on it. You know, never had any problems with anybody stealing it. That was after I learned the land and saying, okay, this is, I want to hunt this ridge. And I had climbers. I used climbers a lot back in the day. And you didn't have to get that high off the ground, just high enough that, you know, 15 feet, maybe 15, less than 20. and then using that to my advantage in watching deer. But basically, tools of the trade are minimal, and then just studying the landscape, I think.
I mean, even if you don't have the money, you just have a bow, right? You have a bow and a tag and a car. at the very minimum, I want to kind of brush up on what you said a little bit about just going out there and hunting the land, walking around. I feel like we just had someone on the podcast. Was it Larry Wysoon that we just had on the podcast who is someone who is familiar with doing that? Or am I thinking of someone else like Dan Small?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part. I was taking a sip of water there.
So I was asking where at, like, I feel like we just had someone on the podcast who was kind of just speaking on what you said about hunting the land, and that specific person hunted the land, like literally walked around with bow and arrow in hand.
It was Larry.
Was it Larry Wysoon?
Larry Wysoon, Mr. Whitetail. Yeah. And those are the types of guys, respect your elders.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I always say is, those guys knew what they were doing. And before you dismiss any of like your grandpa's wisdom or anything like that, those guys knew what they were doing it in their time.
Without the topo maps and, well, with topo maps, but without those electronic, you know, apps and stuff.
Right. So a lot of that stuff can really, but basically walking around, that's, you're hunting a wild creature. You're hunting something that doesn't, you know, have a flip phone, geez, that's showing my age. It doesn't have a smartphone and it doesn't have all these tools. Basically, it's learning how to survive. You have to get in there and learn that natural habitat. Nothing can replace that. No advice I can give you, no aerial photo, no zoom in thing that I can, like I said, look in and see the property lines. None of that is going to replace actually being out there and learning how they use the land and why. What are they eating and why are they eating it and when are they eating it? Why are they bedding over there? Normally it's because it's the most secluded place there is, or they don't get bothered there, or that neighbor doesn't allow hunting, or whatever the stipulation might be. And basically going, the other thing too that I should bring in here is we let our minds really, we overthink stuff so incredibly bad. That's why I say don't, back in the day before we had the apps, like I said, when we had the photos, and this, if he's listening, if he's listening, he's going to know I'm pointing him out. I'm not going to name him by name. There was a guy in our office. He would come in with the maps and he'd lay it down, and that thing was circled so much. And he's like, I think, you know, this is going to be a great spot for a stand right here because, you know, we got a natural funnel there. And it was almost like a war map. And he's like, we got a natural funnel there, and this neighbor doesn't allow hunting, and this guy's got corn, and this guy's got alfalfa. I said, yeah, that's great. But you know deer are coming through there, but you're not going to know how the deer are coming through there, when they're coming through there, why. You know, why are they coming through there in the morning versus night? There's so many of those different nuances that you just have to learn by being out there and hunting it. And that's just sitting your butt on the ground or in a rock or in a tree stand. And I know that's what some people don't want to hear. They want to hear, like, what's your magic solution? There's no magic solution. Magic solution is just hard work. Hard work and observation and just trying to hone in on your inner predator, and I mean that. It's like you have to have that predator instinct because that's how wolves are killing stuff. That's how coyotes are killing stuff. They basically get to the nitty-gritty. To my point, that was a long preface. To my point is you have to have a short memory when hunting public land, and that's in the book. I've talked about it. I did numerous seminars back in the day. If you guys ever came to any of the deer and turkey seminars, you've heard me talk. I actually had a seminar called Have a Short Memory. And what I mean by that is, do you ever play sports?
Yeah.
Baseball, football, especially football.
Nope.
Okay. So you've watched NFL, though.
Yeah.
So the cornerback, defensive back, they always say has to have a short memory.
Yeah.
And what they mean by that is if you got burned on one play, you got to have a short memory. You got to get it out of your mind, and you got to focus on that next play that's coming at you. When you're a public land hunter, you have to have a short memory on several things. The biggest one is intrusions from other hunters, because that's going to drive you out of the woods more quickly than anything else is like you get there and you're all excited. You've been thinking about this all week, Ian. You pull up there, you park, you've got that spot circled on your app. This is the place I'm going to hunt. I scouted it. The acorns are dropping, and you get in there and you're in there for an hour, and here comes some rock farmer walking through and sits on a frickin' pail 50 yards from you. And you're like, GD it, you know, I put all this work in and now you're pissed. It's Saturday or it's Wednesday and you took off from work and you're like, hey, you just screwed up this spot. You got to have a short memory. And it might not be better the next time or the next time. But when you're hunting public land, you're behind the eight ball. So you have to just absorb blow after blow if it's stuff like that. Or if it's some, I've had ladies riding their horses through the woods. Well, this is public land. I can do it. You know, and I've had people walking their dogs right here. I did that when I was hunting with my crossbow behind the office here. And you just get so angry and you just want to say, screw it. I'm never doing this again. And the guys that are successful are the ones that can just turn that off, have a short memory. They come back. That's all right. That's all right. You know, slap me in the face. I'll turn the cheek. And then they come back in there 4 weeks later and they kill a buck during the rut. Because the deer, does it bother the deer in that particular time? Probably yes. But that spot that you found is good for a reason, and it's going to be good throughout the year. So it's going to be that's something I can't stress enough, is find those spots and then just be very, very patient until everything kind of that day happens where you have the perfect weather, you have the perfect wind, nobody's screwing around with you, and you get in there and boom, here comes a buck walking down that trail.
Short memory, patience, and like you said, come back 4 weeks later and you kill a buck during the rut. I kind of want to talk about that timing for all of this. The next question, what would you say, I mean, there's no particular the best time for any, you know, for all, any and all places. We have to be very specific when we talk about the best time for certain places, but what should, you know, young hunters, like in terms of their schedules, like let's say school, whether it's college or high school or whatever it is, what should they kind of, what times should they look forward to? And where do you think?
This is my camera right here, because I'm going to look right in your eye and tell you, if you are a young person and you're in school, the best time for you. Okay, so if you're in college, the best time for you to hunt is not on the weekend. It's Tuesday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. During the day, circle it down. I killed so many deer in the, and you have the luxury, if you're in college, you've got, invariably you're not going to school every single day. I know my daughter has classes, I think on like Tuesdays and Thursdays only. You know, some kids do that. They load up on, or maybe it's 3 days, maybe it's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. But the people that you're probably going to be competing against are guys who probably want it more than you, but they got a real job. Those are the guys that are working at the foundry, that are working in construction. I did that for 25 years with my dad, 20 years. Not full-time, but throughout school. Those guys are living for the weekend. Bless their hearts. They make this country run. But they very rarely get a day off in the middle of the week. Cherish those days during the week. I don't care when it is. Number one, cherish the days during the week. Mornings or afternoons, depends. It really depends upon where you're hunting. Can you get in there without busting stuff out of there? Boy, we could talk about that, because Johnny Eberhardt, he actually wrote about this, so did Gary Clancy back in the day. If you could just listen to those, Eberhardt's written numerous books. He's got YouTube videos. Watch him. Clancy, rest his soul, passed along. He was a Vietnam veteran, good friend of mine, hell of a bull hunter from Minnesota. He wrote about it in several books. But what they would say is, you have to, okay, John was the one who taught me hunting public land. I think we talked about this once during a podcast. I'm going to repeat it. If you're hunting in the morning, for me, minimum, bare minimum, 90 minutes in that stand, settled, ready to go before first light, 90, hour and a half. And I would tell this at seminars. I was like, man, why are you sitting in a tree stand sometimes 2 hours before it's first light when you can't even shoot anything? Here's why. You get back in there, you scout that public land, and you're like, okay, let's just say that it's first light at 6:30. Okay, I'm in that stand at 5 a.m., ready to go, locked, cocked, ready to rock, doc, as Ted would say.
Wind's good, all the conditions.
Everything's good. And I'm going to basically strap myself in with my hunter safety system, belt, taut, it's holding me up.
You should be and strapping yourself in.
Always, yes. Always. Connected from the ground all the way up on a lifeline. And then I will, if I have to close my eyes for a little bit, I will. Because here's the thing. You get in there. You don't just blunder back in there, bust back in there, and get up in there. You get in there. You very quietly sneak back in there. If a buck is going to be coming through there, which they normally do at the cusp end of daylight, you know, mornings or evenings, they're coming through, and let's say that buck comes through at 6 o'clock. Well, he walks past me in the dark. I don't see him. What good did that do me? What it did was I have a chance still. That buck's going to come through. He might be feeding. He might be heading back from a bedding area. He might be doing whatever. He could be staging. I don't know. But let's say he comes back through 10 o'clock, midday, he might be coming back through again. If I bust him on the way in, if I'm going to go in there at a half an hour before first light, I learned this the hard way. I would bust deer all the time. I'd be trying to get in there half an hour before first light, bust deer, get in my stand, didn't see anything. This place sucks. There's nothing here. And then John says, just give yourself another hour and then stay longer. And when I did that, holy crap, did I start seeing deer during midday. Was it like the floodgates open? No. But there would be like, here's 9:30, 10 o'clock, here comes a deer walking just casually as can be right back on the trail. Shit, this is going to happen. And it has. It did happen. That's what happened to me. I don't know if that was the question.
Well, no, it was more about like just the timing and kind of played off of like
middays, or midweek days.
And just start midweek days and not just that, but just also starting early. And I appreciate that, you know, advice too, just getting out there 2 hours early and scouting out the public land that you're going to be hunting.
And then on your way back out, see, it's turkey hunting. We talked about this with Brian Lovett. Turkey hunting, you got to be on the turkey's time. Deer hunting, you have to be on the deer's time. So, like, if you're hunting near a feeding area or a bedding area and it starts getting dark in the afternoon, okay, you've lost legal shooting light, but you know there's a buck stand in there, you got to stay in that stand. You have to stay in that stand as long as possible and safely until you think the deer's out of there before you slip out of there. Because if they see you coming out of there, game's over. I mean, are they going to like completely leave the area? No, but you educate them very fast.
Piece of advice for anyone out there, college and high school, whoever has a Thanksgiving break, whoever just gets that sweet week off, whether it be 3 days, 4 days, you know, a short weekend, long weekend, take that time to go out there and hunt. Because I mean, people are going to be eating. Think about the times where people are busy. Think about like football games too. I mean,
awesome.
I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but I feel like in Wisconsin, if you go hunting during Packers season,
always. You know, yeah, I hunt every Sunday.
Yeah,
if I can.
Yeah,
if I have a tag and I mean,
we're listening to the game in the blind sometimes.
I tape it. I'm dating myself there too. I record it or whatever the hell you want to call it on my DVR, and I'll watch it at night and skip through all the commercials. Excellent point. Best times, ideal time, middle of the week. Other times, raining. Hard rain, no, I won't hunt in hard rain. Soft, light rain, yes, I will. But you also have to have self-control. Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. You're going to hunt in a soft rain. Chances are nobody else is going to be out there. They're not going to be doing it. They're not going to be deer hunting. You have to say, if I'm hunting in a light rain, it's got to be a slam dunk. It's got to be 15 yards, and that deer's looking the other way, and I'm putting that thing through both lungs without it 100%. 100% in my mind, that's going to happen. Light rain, great time to hunt. Football Sundays, great time. Football Saturdays for college hunting, football, great times to hunt. Think in those terms. But the younger listeners and viewers, think outside the box. And there is a book out there called Embrace the Suck. And that is about, that's about business. No, come on, be careful. It's about, it's a business book. Embrace how much that difficult situation is. That's a better way of putting it.
Yeah.
And if you do that, I think you're going to find more success.
Yeah, that's a yeah.
Okay, we're not going to end there. I got to give you a couple. Unless you got a question, I think I had a couple more things I had circled here.
I do have a direction and another question actually. Okay, so right now, this time of the year, outside of you know the hunt, what should we be doing to prepare? You know, January, February, March, April, May, June, July. Then we get to August, right? Now we get into September, November, October.
What you should be doing now is this time of year in spring, as much scouting as possible. Save the other stuff for summer when it's just ungodly hot. Save the, I mean, yeah, if you want to shoot your bow and you're having fun doing that, absolutely do that. If you want to be tuning your equipment and adding a piece of gear here and there, I would save the summer months for that. Right now, I would just be full bore scouting mode out in the woods because you're not screwing anything up right now. Turkey hunt, go turkey hunting, whatever you can do. Look for mushrooms. If you have a place where you can still look for sheds, do that. That's what you should be doing right now. As we ease out of spring and now you're getting into summer, that's when I would say really get serious about your equipment setup. Now, I'm not saying you have to spend a lot of money. Like you said before, you don't have to spend a lot. You don't. Just make sure that you are shooting. A good thing here is don't get out there too quickly. So, like, you're shooting. I'm shooting 100 arrows a day or whatever it is. And by August, you're burned out. And now something broke in your bow. You got to curb your enthusiasm there a little bit. Get your stuff dialed in, whatever you need to have, and then start planning your hunting approach, like in your vehicle, your scent control approach. What are you gonna do? Back in the day, what I did is I took I got big sheets of plastic from the hardware store, just the clear plastic. And I'd put those on my vehicle. I mean, okay, that sounds kind of creepy. But, like, when I went hunting, I put those on my seats so I wasn't absorbing scent. I was really starting to think about, yeah, there's a lot of great products that we use. You know, Wildlife Research has awesome stuff. Sprays, laundry detergents. I use all that stuff. But at the end of the day, I'm thinking of, like, especially when I get to August and September, I want to have my approach intact. Okay, so I got all my stuff. Here's all my gear. And then, okay, when hunting season comes up, I mean, we used to get weird. We stopped, you know, some of us, I didn't, but some of us, they'd stop eating meat before the season because they thought, like, oh, that scent is permeating. That's getting kind of weird, you know, permeating your pores. And the big buck hunters, I can't argue with them. Those guys are just insanely good hunters. But we would also think about, like, our vehicles, our scent-free approach there. The other thing that I would think about is now, before you get to summer, are your entry and your exit routes to those spots? So let's say you're out there this weekend and you find a spot. One thing that I did that really improved our success rates when we hunted big public forests was you have to keep your secrets. And we would go through great lengths on our entry and exit routes. Steve Bartilla has written about this many, many times in Deer and Deer Hunting, but you don't take the easiest route. You don't park in the designated parking spot, take the designated trail, and then go to the spot that you found. You do that, I guarantee you somebody's going to follow you and figure it out. At some point, they're going to figure it out. What we did, we ran dummies, like where one guy would park in the parking lot and then we'd take the truck and drive down and drop us off and walk in back ways. We would figure out alternative routes to get there. Other ones, in some cases, you can get permission to cut across a private property. I've done that. So, like, there was a guy that I used to know. He owned a 40. He wouldn't let me hunt it, but he told me I could park in his barnyard and then walk down his fence line and then cut across it to get to the public land. And that was like it. But that I figured out in summer. I went over there. I said, listen, I know you hunt. I don't want to hunt your land. I mean, I would if you let me, but I knew he wasn't going to. He had family and kids and stuff that hunted. But I said, all I want to do is walk down there and cut across. He said, yeah, not a problem. And he said, if you want. And then what we did is we went and cleared a path. I believe that was in June or July. and we cleared a path into one corner. So I think there's some down logs and stuff that we had to get rid of. And then we accessed it that way. And we were hunting the same public land where if you drove past the parking lot on any given gun season day, there was always activity. And then we'd shoot a deer, wouldn't try to get back through that public land. We got permission on that, guys. But on that one was that one particular, we dragged it back out. But on some of the other ones, we would drag them down creeks. We would drag them down through really thick, nasty areas. Never, ever, ever tip anybody off. Does that sound selfish? Maybe. But we put so much work into that, and it's a shared resource, that if you do tip it off, you're not only going to alert somebody to it then, but then next year they bring a friend, and then they bring a friend next year. And before you know it, that nice little honey hole that you found on public land isn't so much of a honey hole anymore. Anybody, young or old, you're listening to this podcast, watching the podcast, please just get us a comment somehow, however you have to get it to us. Type it over to us on our Facebook page. Just put it on a random post. We'll find it. We've got 6 people monitoring everything all day long. And also, please give us a review on the podcast platform where you're listening to it, because that will help you get those the new podcasts basically delivered to you as we drop them every Thursday, right, Ian?
That is correct. Every Thursday at around 6 or 7 p.m.
6 or 7 p.m. Central Time. So for Ian Sanchez, thank you for joining us again for another episode of Deer Talk Now. We very much appreciate it, and we will catch you next Thursday for another episode right here at Deer Talk Now.
Man.
Hey, there's that sound again. We know what that all means. It means we're going to thank one of our sponsors. Today's episode of Deer Talk Now is brought to you by 10 Point and the all-new Nitro 505, the fastest crossbow in the world. With speeds of up to 505 feet per second and 227 foot-pounds of blistering power, the Nitro 505 is the fastest crossbow on the market and the most powerful crossbow ever built by 10 Point. I have not shot this crossbow yet. I am going to later this year, but my buddy Brad Fenson has. You might have already seen the videos on our YouTube page and other places on Deer and Deer Hunting. Brad is reporting that this crossbow has a perfect balance of reverse draw power in a platform that is unmatched in its ability to produce speed and power. The Nitro 505 is equipped with the newly designed RX8 cam system, a 2-stage zero creep S1 trigger that delivers a consistent, crisp 3.5-pound pull, and the easy cocking and decocking systems that dealers recommend most, the AccuSlide. Check them out today at a 10 Point dealer near you, or go online for more information at 10pointcrossbows.com.